mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Findlay City School students will be heading back to class this week. Time for a refresher on safety protocols for kids, parents, and the rest of us too, in order to make it a successful and uneventful school year. Also this morning, students can't learn if they can't hear. How to recognize the warning signs of hearing issues and when to get your kids to the audiologist. And after months of examining local needs and options, the Community Action Commission and HATS are giving the public a first look at their nearly completed Hancock County Transit Development Plan. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, August 13th, 2024. Really weird story out of Monroe County, Michigan, yesterday. So just over the border from Toledo, multiple law enforcement agencies were called to the scene after a watercraft with unidentified surveillance equipment on board was found. It was an unmanned watercraft with unidentified surveillance equipment on it. It was just tootling around the harbor, apparently. Crews were called to the Toledo Beach Marina in LaSalle Township just before noon yesterday, following reports of a suspicious watercraft. Officials say unidentified surveillance equipment and lithium batteries to power said surveillance equipment were found on board. There was no crew. It was like the aquatic equivalent of a drone. You know, just an unmanned ship. It was a boat. Once the boat was removed from the water, reports say that the boat had SeaTrack branding on it, SeaTrac, SeaTrack, and the words uncrewed surface vehicle were written on the side. Now, I looked it up, and SeaTrack is a company that designs and develops uncrewed surface vehicles for defense, environmental, and offshore energy applications. Okay. The company, the website says the company is based in Massachusetts, but they're not the ones who do the surveillance or do these this work. They just sell the boat. So who it belongs to and what they were doing apparently is still a mystery. I tried to find an update of this story this morning online somewhere. I couldn't find any new news on this, but on top of state and local officials, they've called in Border Patrol and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to try and figure out what's going on. No, apparently the watercraft was not registered, so they can't just look up the registration and figure out who it belongs to. I would imagine they could find the serial number, they could call the company and they can tell them who they sold it to, but it's, the whole thing is a bit of a mystery. Just a weird story out of Monroe County, Michigan yesterday. So the big story yesterday, and apparently now Kamala Harris has jumped on board the bandwagon of an idea that was first proposed by President Trump a couple of months ago to take service workers and hospitality workers in this country and make the tips that they earn non-taxable income. So you're not going to be taxed on tips. And even President Biden said yesterday now that if Congress were to pass such a law, that he would sign it. So everybody is on board with this idea of making tips non-taxable. Now, let me first say that I have no problem with the idea of people paying less income tax. I don't want to pay I don't want to pay income tax. I don't know anybody who does. Everybody would like to pay less tax. That being said, I do have a problem with carving out one group of individuals and telling them half of your income is not going to be taxable anymore. You know what I mean? What about the rest of us? This is the way they make their income. Their minimum wage is lower. Employers pay them less. So their tips make up, in some cases, half or more of their income, and you're telling that group of individuals, we're not going to tax half of your income. What about me? The first thing I'm going to do is go to the boss and say, hey, cut my salary in half and tip me the rest. You know what? I thought the idea was particularly hypocritical coming from Democrats, who have spent the better part of the last decade and a half talking about how rich people aren't paying their fair share. So, I don't know. I just have a problem with carving out one special group of individuals and saying half of your income is going to be tax-free. And the rest of us, we get taxed on all of our income. Just doesn't seem quite right somehow. I tell you one thing. If they were to pass this, the one thing that they had better do is also pass a law to make my Christmas bonus non-taxable. And, you know, those profit-sharing bonuses that some companies give their employees, you better make those non-taxable, because aren't they basically the same thing? So you better do that, too. And apparently it is not just at the federal level. Now I understand that there is a proposal in the state legislature to make tips non-taxable in the state of Ohio as well. And I'm not naive enough to believe that most service workers, waiters and waitresses and such, were claiming every, reporting every tip that they got all year long as taxable income, like you are really supposed to do. I'm sure that those numbers are getting fudged either deliberately or accidentally or what have you. I'm sure some of that money, some of that income goes untaxed already. But it's the principle of the thing. Anyway, I want that same break. But anyway, so apparently they're looking at this. Now, it was also pointed out, and I think it's important to say, that most service workers, restaurant workers and so on, make, I think they said on average in the state of Ohio, like $33,000, which is just above the threshold where Ohio starts taxing any income at all. So a fair number are not getting taxed on very much of their income to begin with. So it's not a huge difference. But the idea that, I don't care whether it's, you know, rich CEOs or, you know, the waitress at the Greasy Spoon, you know, getting taxed at a lower base than the rest of us, just doesn't seem fair somehow. I did think this was kind of interesting, and it's on a bit of a related note. There is a recent study out that shows that Ohio residents now need to make just under $21 an hour in order to comfortably afford a two-bedroom apartment. They're using that as sort of the benchmark for affordable housing, a two-bedroom apartment. This is a report from the National Low Housing Income Coalition, which lists the fair market value for apartments in, for example, the state capital of Columbus at $1,300 per month, meaning that residents in that city would need to earn roughly $52,000 annually to avoid paying out over 30% of their income for housing and utilities. The statewide average apartment price is a little lower than that, so the income requirement would be a little less, but it works out to be just under $21 an hour that people in Ohio have to make in order to comfortably afford a two-bedroom market at prevailing market rates. I thought that was kind of interesting. Let's see. And another, again, speaking of income, people struggling and all of that, new group Hunger Free Schools Ohio is pushing state lawmakers to provide free meals at all Ohio schools. This is an idea that has really picked up steam since the pandemic, because you remember when kids went back to class, they made school meals free for all, figuring that lots of families were hurting. Food banks and so on reported a huge jump in the demand for food assistance and so on. The large number of people who were hurting, this was one thing that could be done to alleviate some of that stress on families, is to make school lunches free. But now there's this push to say, hey, you know, this is something we should do all the time. And the And this would apply regardless of family income, just right across the board. School lunches would be free. The chair of the Ohio House Finance Committee, Jay Edwards, says he is all for the idea of making free meals universal, but it may be difficult to find the funding to do this moving forward. Some school districts in Ohio, including the Columbus City Schools in the state capital, already provide free breakfast and lunch to all students through a federally backed program. But, you know, the problem with those federal programs, you never know when the funding there might be cut. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting as well, especially as we are coming up toward back to school. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day on a completely different note. But I thought this was interesting and something to chew on. What state or what city, what state and city, swears the most as the biggest potty mouth? They're the biggest potty mouths in this country. Wordtips.com analyzed more than 1.7 million social media posts to figure out which states swear the most. Now, I don't know if this is the best barometer of that, but it's what they used. 1.7 million English language social media posts to determine what states swear the most. Overall, 41.6 out of every 1,000 Americans post a comment or, you know, some sort of social media post that contains a swear word. Maryland is the one state that curses the most, at least online. 66.3 posts per 1,000 contain a swear word from users in the state of Maryland. The cleanest state is South Dakota. Only 21 out of 1,000 posts use offensive language. And the cities that curse the most online would be Baltimore, Baton Rouge, Atlanta, Detroit, and Houston. So, now, one could certainly argue that those are states that have reason. They have the most reason to swear. But there you go. Something kind of interesting there. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. As we get your Tuesday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny skies expected today with a high around 80. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the mid-60s. An investigation is underway after two people were found dead of gunshot wounds in Seneca County. Deputies and EMS personnel arrived at the scene on East Township Road 106 in Republic to discover a man and a woman lying in their backyard, deceased from apparent gunshot wounds. The sheriff's office says it appears that one of the deceased sustained a gunshot wound and the other appeared to have sustained a self-inflicted gunshot wound, but additional investigation will be necessary by their office and the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation. Get more in this story on our website. An Ohio lawmaker has introduced a bill to make grooming a crime.
It would be a misdemeanor offense for anyone 18 and older to engage in a pattern of conduct with a minor that would cause a reasonable adult to believe that the person is communicating with a minor with the purpose to entice, coerce, solicit, or prepare the minor to engage in sexual activity. When the case involves a child under 13, it becomes a felony. Lawmakers concede proving these cases may be difficult, but say it's a first step.
ONN's Jay Fox reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library says it's used a $5,000 grant from the Community Foundation to purchase a collection of more than 100 playaway audiobooks for children. The library says the audiobook devices allow kids to listen to books without a phone, CD player, or other device. All they need to do is plug in headphones or a speaker. The library says it's excited that the grant from the Community Foundation has enabled them to add this high-demand item. Get more details in the story on our website. The city of Findlay is letting people know that a section of a road will be closing for repairs. The city says on Wednesday from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., Washington Street from Liberty Street to Hurd Avenue will be closed for sanitary sewer repairs. Get more on this and other road projects in Findlay and the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, by now I think everybody knows Findlay City Schools students be heading back to class this week, day after tomorrow, in fact. And so it is time for a bit of a refresher on some safety protocols and things of that nature for kids and for parents and for the rest of us, too, hopefully with the goal of making it not only a successful but an uneventful school year. FPD Crime Prevention Officer Brian White is with us in the studio this morning. Brian, good to see you once again.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me again.
By the way, I want to mention that the rescheduled Flag City Night Out is happening this evening, right?
Yes, absolutely. Last week, last Tuesday, obviously we had a little bit of rainstorms and even potential tornadoes. So
much different today. So
we made the call early on that we needed to go with this Tuesday instead. Gave us a little more time to prepare. If the weather looks beautiful, yes, we are having our event tonight at Riverside Park at 6 o'clock. So okay. That's Flag City Night Out.
So all of the stuff as before.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, same stuff we were talking about last time. The police cars, fire trucks, food, entertainment.
Yeah,
kind of games, events. Lots of stuff going on. Root beer floats.
Yeah, don't forget the root beer
floats. Absolutely, that's
my
favorite.
Don't forget the root beer floats. So that again is at Riverside Park at 6 o'clock?
Correct. Riverside Park kicks off at 6 o'clock. We'll be there till 9 o'clock. So I know a couple of schools have kind of their orientation this evening. Mm-hmm. So feel free to stop out and join us afterwards.
Okay. And I'm sure one of the things that we talked about the night out is it's a great opportunity for kids and parents to interact with law enforcement, maybe ask some questions. I'm sure this time of year you get lots of questions about back to school and, you know, things of that nature.
Oh, I get questions all the time. Matter of fact, in the parking lot, I was getting questions as I was out there. So, yeah, and that's what we're here for, is questions.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the back to school safety issues that, again, get a bit of a refresher course because it's been a little while. And one of the things that has been popping up on my social media feed from a number of law enforcement agencies are warnings against oversharing on social media, parents sharing too much information about their kids on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. If we're talking about ways that people can potentially harm us, it's information, right? Information is key. So if we are giving out too many details, for instance, maybe that family trip that we're planning next week to go down to Florida, which obviously school starting, probably not going down to Florida, but just an example. If we put that out there on social media, that now gives someone a prime idea when it's time to break into our house because we're not going to be there.
Yeah.
Right? So that's just one example of oversharing.
And with the kids going back to school, posting all of those back to school pictures and so on, everybody loves those. But, you know, if people know where your kids are going to school and
photos,
all of that,
even as not innocuous as maybe our favorite Findlay Trojans outerwear. Right. Maybe it says Glenwood Middle School. Maybe it says Donnell Middle School. Yeah. We now just giving someone a pretty good clue as to where our kids go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Those little pictures that we share about what's our favorite pet, what's our favorite color, all those are just little details that a potentially nefarious person can maybe clue in on, right?
Yeah.
Hey, do you like cats, little kid? Well, obviously they do because this is what they say in their post.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of little pieces of information like that.
Yeah. So just something, again, not that there's a huge danger of people stalking your kids, but it never hurts to be cautious.
Correct.
We don't want to overstate the risk, but it's not like the risk is zero.
Absolutely. We live in a very safe community, but there is always a potential for something to happen. And that's where we really have to take it upon ourselves to be responsible and protect ourselves.
Yeah. So in terms of the physical back to school time, and we've mentioned this, especially, you know, come Thursday when the buses are rolling, we have to remind ourselves that the buses are out there and making frequent stops and school zones and all of those things that we all have to be mindful of.
Correct. And usually that's what happens. Hey, there's a school bus. Oh, you know what? School is starting.
Yeah.
I should probably pay a little better attention to my driving.
Right.
And that's one that really induces a lot of panic in people when they see the school bus slowing down, the amber lights coming on. Oh, am I supposed to stop? Am I not? You know what? I'm going to avoid it altogether and go down Side Street.
Yeah. Well, that works too. But again, stopping for the school buses, very important. You can get in a lot of trouble if you don't. So.
Correct. And that's where we talk about lanes, right? If we're talking about three lanes or less, we are required by law to stop for a school bus. If we are talking four lanes or more, you're not required because the kids are getting off on that side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one that's particularly confusing.
Yeah. Same thing for divided streets, you know, where there's a boulevard down the middle. And not all students are going to be riding the bus. There will be walkers. So what do we tell the kids before we send them out on that first day?
Sure. Hopefully parents are already having that discussion with our kiddos, right? You know, about safety, looking both ways. Don't be darting across the middle of the street between cars, only crossing at intersections, hopefully in marked crosswalks. Mm-hmm. That's where it's safest.
Right.
Also, not running late, right? Have all your stuff packed up, ready to go the night before. Wearing bright clothing. That way we kind of stand out, especially as starts to get darker in the mornings. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to be visible.
Right.
Reflective wear, that's always good as well. And walking in groups. Kids are particularly vulnerable when they're by themselves, so we want to make sure that we're walking in larger groups.
Again, to reference what we were saying earlier, it's a safe community, but you don't want to take any chances.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but if someone needs help, right, there's more people there to get help.
Very good point as well. And as we've mentioned a number of times with respect to that, you know, we can remind our kids about the importance of crossing where they should and being on the lookout for traffic. But especially in those first few days, they're very excited about getting back to school and seeing their friends and meeting their new teacher and getting the new school year started. So they're going to be distracted. We cannot afford to be distracted as we're driving.
Absolutely.
Expect the unexpected.
Yes, definitely expect the unexpected. Expect a little kiddo to go run out in front of you.
Yeah.
We just have to have our heads on a swivel and paying attention to what's going on. Not playing on our phones, mind you. That's
exactly.
A big one.
And with respect to that, some students, again, not riding the bus, not walking, but once they get a little bit older, are going to be driving themselves. So, again, having that conversation with your older kids when they're driving into those school zones themselves.
Hey, absolutely. And one of the things that we find is that younger drivers will imitate older drivers, right? They are going to do what mom and dad do. If they see you playing on your phone, if they see you speeding, if they see you not wearing your seatbelt,
That's
probably likely they're going to do the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So modeling good behavior.
You know,
key.
One of the other things, and it's not so much an issue with the Findlay City schools, but here in a couple of weeks when all of the county schools get back into class, there are a lot of county schools that have all grade levels in the same location or very nearby locations. So, again, reminding those teen drivers to be on the lookout for the little kids who may be out there going to school.
Absolutely,
as well.
Yes. Always paying attention to what's going on. And speaking of driving, it's also very important to bring up school speed zones because that can be a little bit confusing in of itself. Now, the state law actually says that the speed limits are 20 miles per hour in school zones during school recess and while children are going to or leaving school during opening or closing hours. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people are, well, what is the actual time for school zones? When is this in effect?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the answer is not so easy because each school has different opening times, closing times.
Right.
This is pretty broad. So this is why a lot of schools have installed flashing signs at the beginning of the school zones just to kind of alert people to what's going on.
Right.
Not that those signs are required because you're still required to follow the law even if those signs are not present, but it does give you an extra heads up. What I tell people is if there's kids present, slow down, right?
Yeah.
That's the safest way, especially if they're walking with obviously backpacks. We can kind of tell, hey, these are students.
We need
to slow down.
And especially not just before and after school, as you mentioned, during recess, but again, referencing Findlay High School, open lunches.
Correct.
Kids are going to be out in the middle part of the day.
And that's why that school zone is always enforced because we do have kids leaving and coming to school during all hours.
And as you mentioned, there are, in fact, school zones just north of Findlay High School at Heritage Christian. No lights, but it's still a school zone.
Correct.
So
correct.
You know, don't forget about those as well. And, you know, the other thing, and there's a story in the news just today, first day of school, parent dropping off their student at school, and kid drops something under the vehicle. She goes to reach it. Parent thinks that she's already gone and actually ran over her own daughter.
Yeah.
A tragedy. And it is avoidable to a certain extent. But if you are dropping off your kids, you got to really be careful.
You really have to pay attention. Yeah. You really do, especially when you're in a school line with lots of cars, lots of kids, and there's a lot of pressure to get traffic through, right, because we're backing up traffic.
Right.
Make sure that we are paying very close attention to our kid and other kids around us. And I'm sure teachers, I'm absolutely sure they are doing the exact same thing, and they are doing what they can to make sure it's a safe environment.
But not the time, and we've all heard those stories, you get frustrated with the time it takes to drop your kid off and so on. But again, frustration can lead to distraction.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. All very important stuff to remember as we send the kids back to school. Again, Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White with us this morning with those reminders. And again, Flag City Night Out tonight.
Yes, beautiful night. Come out and join us. Come out and see us. If you got those questions, come out and ask us.
Absolutely.
We're happy to answer them.
Brian, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
So, you know, as we have been talking the past couple of weeks about back to school and getting the kids ready with all of their school supplies and getting them to the doctor for the checkup and their vaccinations and all of that, and the other day we were talking about getting to the eye doctor, make sure that they can see. Well, students also can't learn if they can't hear. And joining us this morning is Jody Turnwald, the proprietor of the Findlay Hearing Center. Jody, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Good to see you. So I understand that this is a growing problem among kids, even at young ages, that you're seeing more and more children with hearing issues.
We are. We're seeing, they're saying between 1 in 8 kids are having some type of hearing loss. The kids are really listening to their earbuds or their headsets way too loud.
Is that the main culprit here?
That's what we're thinking.
What are some of the signs that your kids maybe are having hearing issues?
That's a tough one, because are they ignoring us or they just can't hear us?
that's very true, especially if you have a teenager.
That's correct.
but yeah, I mean, is it just as simple as that, or are there, you know, other things that, you know, can be warning signs that we can be on the lookout for?
You know, if they're watching TV and the TV's up louder, if their radio's a little louder, they aren't able to hear through a conversation with maybe a little background noise on. And again, that's a hard one, because are they listening or are they not hearing us? But a scan is always good to have, and that way you know. But a lot of times their ears might just be full of wax as well.
Yeah, so it could be something relatively simple.
Very much.
That's easily correctable. It's interesting you mentioned, again, you know, as teenagers, they will tend to have selective hearing by nature. And you mentioned if they're listening to their music too loud. When I was a teenager, I listened to my music too loud too, but it wasn't because I had trouble hearing. It was just because I was a teenager. So it is interesting you bring that up, that there can be any number of reasons that may or may not indicate permanent hearing loss, but if it is something serious, you want to get that early.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So talk a little bit about what a hearing screening will look like. I mean, if you have a young person coming, a child, say K through 12, somewhere in that age range, what does that screening entail?
It's just like a normal screening we'd have for an adult. We would just screen the simple frequencies to make sure there's any losses, no losses, and then we'd go from there.
Yeah. And then what would be available to help correct that a problem? If you do discover that there is a problem, what's the fix?
That's a really complex question because it depends on their age and the hearing loss and exactly what's going on and what type of hearing loss. And a lot of times if it's a child, we will refer out for more so they have speech. They have basically a team.
Mm-hmm. So are we talking hearing aids, you know, that kind of thing? Have you encountered that where kids are, you know, having hearing issues to the point where, you know, you have to take that step?
Sometimes. Yeah. It just, again, it's tough because we really do need a test to tell us what's going on with that kid first.
Mm-hmm. How often should kids get screened?
Well, the schools are pretty good about screening in this area, and they're usually doing it about once a year. And then we do get those phone calls, hey, my son or daughter just got screened. They didn't pass. But I would say at least once a year with the school.
Let me ask you for a little bit more detail, to go into a little bit more detail on that. You know, you mentioned that schools do screen. And I know in talking to eye doctors, you know, we all go and get a quote unquote vision test when we renew our driver's licenses. And eye doctors will tell you that's not a real vision test. How accurate or how detailed are those screenings that kids get in the schools?
They're not. Usually the kids are standing in line.
So still kind of the same, same sort of thing. I guess I ask because even if they pass those screening tests, should they be getting into the ear doctor every so often?
Not really. The kids with the screens at school, pass or fail, you know, we could test them after that. But usually we know. I mean, mm-hmm. a parent will know early, very early on, you know, if the kid has a hearing loss or not.
Yeah. Some of those other warning signs that you mentioned earlier. And again, but the point being, don't necessarily rely on those results that you get at a school hearing test. When is it best to, absent any outward signs, again, I reference, you know, the eye doctor, they say, you know, once a year you get in to get your vision checked, and that's kind of a good rule of thumb. What would it be in terms of an audiologist? As a general rule of thumb, would it be once a year or?
I would say every couple years.
Okay. If kids are complaining about, you know, certain maladies, again, ringing in the ears, that kind of thing, when is it a big concern? When should it be a big concern? Immediately. And the main point being that once it's gone, it doesn't come back.
That's correct.
Yeah. So what should parents be doing right now? In advance of back to school time, you know, what advice would you give to parents regarding their kids' hearing?
If they question it, get a test done.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned limiting some of their exposure to loud noises and all of that.
That's correct.
Yeah. So just some reminders for folks to, you know, make sure that this is, student can't learn if they can't hear. So, you know, this is another part of that back to school routine that you have to be alert for. And what is, can you just pick up the phone and call or just, yep. Do you have to be referred? What's the process?
Just pick up the phone and call. And mm-hmm. we'll guide you from there.
Okay. And most cases, is this insurance available to cover this, or does that vary?
It varies.
Okay.
Majority of them will cover the exam itself, but mm-hmm. After that.
Yeah. Again, it just kind of depends on where things go from there. Gotcha. Jody Turnwald, again, with the Findlay Hearing Center, is with us this morning. We're talking about recognizing some of the warning signs of hearing issues, when to get kids to the audiologist. Just one more thing on parents' plates. I realize that, but very important as we head back to school as well. Jody, thanks very much for dropping by this morning. We appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Here is one of those stories that just leaves you shaking your head and wondering, what is this country coming to? A 12-year-old boy in Massachusetts had his ice cream stand shut down after complaints from the neighborhood. The young man said he started his ice cream stand to make some money this summer. The family also decided, and this was, so it's not just he was making some money, he also was taking some of the proceeds and putting those toward his brother's hockey club, the Boston Bear Cubs. So, you know, the youth sports team was making a little money as well through all of this. And the kid had his family's blessing and all of that. Well, the ice cream stand now has been shut down after the Norwood Health Department said that there were somebody, they got a report from somebody in the neighborhood, reported them, the ice cream stand. It is unclear what the violation was. It was a health code thing or a lack of a business permit or something along those lines. But thank goodness the folks in Norwood, Massachusetts are making the community safe from 12-year-olds selling ice cream. Make a little money during the summer. Thank goodness the community is safe. Have they issued a Karen alert? Have they... Norwood, Massachusetts. Man. Elsewhere in the broken news, boy, you talk about bad luck. This is how you know you are having a bad day. A driver is injured after crashing into a home in Buena Park, California. His bad luck that there was also a beehive. I don't know if it was a beehive, you know, one of those that had beehive, you know, in the walls of the home that nobody knew about, or whether the homeowner actually was keeping a beehive on the property. But in either case, the crash occurred Sunday afternoon. The driver slammed into the home and knocked the beehive loose. He ended up getting stung several times, had to be taken to the hospital. I'm not sure what was worse, the injuries from the crash or the stings from the bees, but the Orange County Fire Authority says firefighters had to cool the hundreds of bees with soap and water to calm them down before they could clean up the mess. Now, that's how you know you're having a bad day. You drive your car into a home and not only destroy your car, the home, but also a beehive. Insult to injury, that is a bad day. That is a bad day. Let's see here. Now, this is another story where you know you're having a bad day. Imagine you are on a flight from San Francisco to the resort town of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And the pilot comes on the intercom and makes an announcement. I'm really sorry, folks, but due to the pilot not having proper qualification to land at this airport, we need to divert to Salt Lake City. Apparently, the pilot did not have the proper qualification to land the plane. And believe it or not, that is exactly what happened to passengers on a recent Alaska Airlines flight. The plane, when it landed in Salt Lake City, passengers said it was one of the bumpiest landings they had ever experienced. And when it did finally land, it remained on the tarmac for nearly an hour and a half before a replacement pilot took over, and they eventually made it to Jackson Hole 3 hours late. So whether the diversion was simply a safety precaution due to the conditions at Jackson Hole at the time, or whether maybe the pilot made a poor choice of words, or if he indeed did not have the proper qualifications, the question remains, how did he end up on that flight, the pilot? So, a lot of unanswered questions there, but imagine that you were on that flight and you got that announcement. This is your pilot speaking. I'm sorry, I'm not qualified to land the plane. This is like something out of the movie Airplane. You know, that would be something that... Couple of other items here in the broken news. Florida woman Kaylin Alexander has been arrested for allegedly using stolen checks to buy $450 worth of plants. If you're going to steal somebody else's checks, write them fraudulently, you're going to go buy plants? I mean, of all things to buy, Ms. Alexander reportedly attempted to leave the scene of the crime, apparently the plant store, reportedly attempted to leave the scene via an Uber after the seller refused to give her the plants because apparently he was suspicious of the checks. But eventually she was detained. Polk County, Florida deputies say they found a they found drug paraphernalia and stolen credit cards from different people on her person. She is now facing charges including grand theft, using personal ID of a deceased person, and forgery, among others. Tried to buy $450 worth of plants. Okay. From the international file, the broken news, a man in New Zealand claims that he went to the hospital for an issue, you know, with his man parts, and woke up the next day to find he had been circumcised against his will. Now, that also is a story. You're having a bad day. Apparently he was seeking treatment for some sort of condition, reproductive condition of some kind. He said, he consented to some medical treatment, but not that particular procedure. And furthermore, it appears the surgeon may have not been in the room when the patient verbally discussed the procedure. The man did not realize that this had been done until several days later. An investigation has resulted in the hospital being asked to formally apologize. But what can you do at that point? I mean, other than apologize. I'm not sure what... It's not like you can fix that problem. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a South Carolina man is suing Buc-ee's. You know, the huge convenience store, saying there's huge stores. Have you ever been to a Buc-ee's? It is quite the experience. If you've never been, a South Carolina man is suing a Buc-ee's convenience store for negligence after he allegedly tripped over the rope that was holding down the store's giant inflatable beaver mascot. He tripped over the tie down, and so now he is suing. In a recently filed court action, Richard E. Brown says he was walking on the sidewalk when he tripped over a rope that was running from the base of the Buc-ee's inflatable beaver mascot to the anchor point. He says the incident left him with several injuries, most notably to his right shoulder. The lawsuit contends that Buc-ee's was aware of the dangerous situation created by the rope. He is suing for negligence and seeking unspecified financial damages. No word on whether Buc-ee's intends to settle the lawsuit, pay up, or just pass the buck. Ease. I know, that was pretty weak. I'm sorry about that. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information.
This message provided by WFIN.
Now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We've got football season started. We're all obviously talking about back to school. So, you know, there is that, the cooler mornings, before too long, it'll start getting darker a little bit earlier and all of that. So all sure signs that autumn is coming. You know, the other sure sign that autumn is right around the corner. We're starting to get pumpkin spice things back. As a matter of fact, who is it that, is it Mickey D's or some other chain has already introduced their pumpkin spice flavored drinks and stuff? I think I read that the other day. I was like, man, this is way too early for pumpkin spice everything. But yeah, it is right around the corner. This is the year that we are, or the time of year that we are inundated with pumpkin spice everything. And according to a new survey of 2,000 adults that was commissioned by Post, you know, the cereal company, 45% of Americans actually say they are tired of pumpkin spice flavor. Now, pumpkin spice was having a moment for a long time. Maybe that moment is over now. 45% of Americans say they're tired of pumpkin spice. 58% in this survey say that there are better fall flavors that simply don't get the attention that they deserve because everybody is so enamored with pumpkin spice. According to Aaron Crawford, Post, whether you've been enjoying your favorite fall flavor for years or you're just starting to search for a new one, maybe it is time to step away from pumpkin spice and enter a new era. And I got to think that maybe the Post people were putting the survey out to decide whether they should introduce pumpkin spice flavored products or maybe develop something new. 70, let's see here. When asked for their favorite fall flavors instead of pumpkin spice, 39% said cinnamon, 37% said salted caramel. And is that an autumn thing, salted caramel? I don't know whether I necessarily associate that with autumn per se, but that's what they said. And 36% said that their favorite fall flavor was candy apple. Ooh, yum. No, candy apple, not caramel apple. In any event, 75% of those, this is the kind of thing that is interesting, too. While we are tired of pumpkin spice, we're not tired of the idea of fall and fall flavors. 75% of those in the survey said that they wish that they could experience fall weather all year round. So there is that. We like fall. It's just the pumpkin spice everything may be growing a bit tiresome, apparently. So coming up later today, after months of examining local needs and options, the Community Action Commission and HATS are giving the public a first look at their nearly completed Hancock County Transit Development Plan. Jamie Baker is Director of Transportation for the HHWP Community Action Commission, the CAC, and is with us in the studio this morning. Jamie, good to see you. Thanks very much for taking the time. We mentioned this has been a number of months in the works. Talk a little bit about what the Hancock County Transit Development Plan is and what the purpose, the goal is here.
Okay. Yeah, Chris, thanks for having me on. The purpose and the goal is to determine what's the best transit that Hancock County wants, that Hancock County needs. What can we do better? What can we change? One of the things I always hear in all my meetings that I go to around town, there's, you know, a couple of primary needs for the community. Mm-hmm. Top of the list is always affordable housing.
Yeah.
I mean, we hear that everywhere.
Right.
And then transportation.
Mm-hmm.
There just doesn't seem to be enough of it for folks. And this is our way of determining what the county needs and what the county wants. And we've had engagements dating all the way back to public engagements dating all the way back to November to get this plan underway, and now we're at the point where we're going to share it with the public.
So, yeah, this actually started, as we said, months ago. You said all the way back in November, started talking, formally talking with, I'm sure the informal discussions happen all the time, but right. Formally discussing the options. I know you put out a survey there. What was the response? I mean, did you were you satisfied with the response from the community to like the surveys and so on?
Yeah, we were very satisfied. We had a first survey, and then we had a second survey, and we've had more than 1,100 responses to the survey, mm-hmm. which is pretty good for a county of our size.
And talking to the right folks, who are most likely to make use of, transit services mm-hmm. and transportation services, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we've tried fixed route services in the past quite a long time ago,
mm-hmm.
but to be perfectly honest, I don't think we had our full faith and heart into it.
Well,
so
that was actually going to be one of the questions I wanted. I mean, are we looking at this as a possibility, moving forward? Because this is something that has been tried in the past and mm-hmm. hasn't worked for one reason or another.
Primarily when they tried it in the past, it was to serve businesses downtown, to get people shopping downtown, mm-hmm. to get people out to the mall.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't designed for those who ride public transit and need public transit on a daily basis. So that's why we specifically went out and tried to talk to riders, and we got demographic information mm-hmm. where folks in the city of Findlay most would use transit mm-hmm. based on their income, lack of a vehicle, mm-hmm. that kind of things, to kind of set the tone for this, what we want to do in the future.
Yeah. So kind of give us an outline. As we mentioned, the plan, the transit development plan, is nearly completed. So mm-hmm. it sounds like maybe there are some finishing touches to put on this. But where are you now, and what does the plan kind of propose?
Okay. We're talking to stakeholders right now, in the community that can help with funding the transit development plan and taking a look at it, doing a little bit of a deeper dive into it. So there were three options. There was a fixed route system that was an option,
mm-hmm.
a micro transit option, which split the city into four zones, and then a regular, what we do now, which is demand response, but in an enhanced way, additional vehicles and so forth. We're a demand response transportation, public transportation, 5311 rural transit program funded through ODOT and the Federal Transit Administration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what most of them in Ohio are. There's 62 rural transit agencies in Ohio. We run transportation in Hancock, Wyandotte, and Hardin counties in a public demand response mm-hmm. fashion.
Yeah.
So
each of those has their advantages over other forms.
Sure. Sure. Right. So. Yeah. I mean, but the option that the preferred option seemed to be the fixed route in the city of Findlay.
Mm-hmm.
Findlay is the largest city in Ohio without any kind of fixed route transportation system.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting.
The largest city in Ohio.
I did not know.
With no fixed routes.
Mm-hmm.
So the primary plan, the preferred plan, so to speak, would make four fixed routes in the city of Findlay. It would cover just about the entire city going north, south, east, and west.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be an additional complementary paratransit that would go with that. So people in wheelchairs, they can't get to a bus stop. If they're within 3/4 of a mile of the fixed route,
okay.
they would still have demand response. We'd pick them up at their door and take them, but they would have to qualify for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that would cover the entire city.
Yeah, that's an interesting twist on that.
Right.
That you would not get in a traditional buses like TARDA and Toledo would not be able to do something like that.
Right. So we would have a separate paratransit for those folks.
Yeah.
But we would have buses like TARDA, like you said,
mm-hmm.
Running the four routes.
Yeah.
And the headways on those routes would be an hour to start. Implement later on, we'll be implementing like 30-minute headways. So it's twice as many buses. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are those who would rely on a transit system of this type, but even in larger cities, it's always been a challenge to make this work financially just by virtue of the fact by serving the people who absolutely need it. I mean, it's always been an ongoing campaign to encourage people to use public transportation, even though maybe they don't necessarily have to. Would that be part of this? And how do you go about, encouraging people to take advantage of this, even when they don't necessarily have to?
Right. First, how we would do it, how I would do it, is the first couple of years, we'd make it free. Because fares are a small part of the funding structure for public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So that would give people an opportunity to ride, get where they need to go, and it wouldn't cost them anything, at least the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would bring on the fares. The way we're funded through grants. And right now we have essentially one grant. We have a grant from the United Way for $60,000. And then we also get contract revenue where we contract with local organizations like Hancock County JFS, the Findlay YMCA,
mm-hmm.
some other folks. And then the federal government gives us money for local public transit dollar for each dollar we bring in contract revenue or grant revenue.
Mm.
So it's a dollar for dollar match on operations, on operating the system.
Yeah.
And it's a 5-to-1 match for vehicles and capital maintenance on the vehicles.
Yeah. So we're just kind of scratching the surface of some of the details of this. Obviously, the plan itself is going to lay out all of the information. And you have a couple of sessions that you are hosting today in order to lay out those details, answer people's questions, and so on. Give us the details on those.
Yeah, today we'll be at 50 North for our first public engagement at 1 o'clock today.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will have a second round today at 5 o'clock at the old Millstream Center at the fairgrounds.
Okay.
It's a tough go because now we're going up against National Night Out with their rain date. But
we're really necessarily planning on that, but yeah, as it
right,
works out.
But so if anybody wants to know more about this plan, please stop out. We'd be happy to tell them about them. I know the cost is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
This would essentially cost in capital costs. It would be $7.7 million. So that's a lot of money when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the federal share of that would be $6.2 million.
So the vast majority.
Yeah. So locally, we'd have to come up with $1.5 million. And that would be for the buses,
mm-hmm.
the bus stops, and possibly a transit center downtown.
Yeah.
Not just for local transportation, but hopefully bringing in regional transportation providers. So we can bring back inner city bus service to the city, which we haven't had in, I don't know, years.
Yeah.
We haven't had a bus stop here for years.
What kind of time frame in terms of a rollout to this would you anticipate?
Well, we'd have to get the buses and arrange for the stop. So this would be like a 5-year plan when it would be, by the time it would be fully implemented.
Fully implemented.
Yeah. The, I have to go. I have to let you know the cost. The cost would be about $1 million for operating,
mm-hmm.
and that's the local share. So the local share would be somewhere between probably end up being between $500,000 and $750,000 a year. Now, previously, public transit was funded by the United Way primarily since 1997.
Mm-hmm.
They gave $250,000 a year to us to run public transit.
Yeah.
So that's dwindled down to $60,000. And it's not fair to have the United Way pay that bill for public transit.
And also, when considering all of these costs, as is always the case, also have to balance that into the economic benefit of being able to get individuals to work, to do the things that they need to do to be self-sufficient.
Right. Most of our transportation is for workforce, actually, which is different from a lot of other rural transit agencies.
Yeah.
In Findlay and Hancock County, we're taking people to work every day. And like I like to say, there's an economic transaction at the end of every ride. Somebody's getting paid. Somebody's going to work, getting paid. Somebody's paying a doctor. Somebody's paying going to the grocery. There's an economic transaction at the end of almost every single ride.
So I've got to look a big picture all of this. So again, if you want to learn more, a couple of informational sessions to allow you to do that. We have a link on our webpage for more information as well. And again, Jamie Baker is Director of Transportation for the CAC on the Hancock County Transit Development Plan. Jamie, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a conversation with the superintendent of the Findlay City Schools, Dr. Andy Hatton, with his welcome back message for the new year. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.